In 1985, Dr. Caldwell Esselstyn began the most comprehensive nutritional research study with patients referred from the Cleveland Clinic. The 24 individuals, all had advanced coronary artery disease, were ineligible for or had declined further treatment, and most had one or two failed bypasses. The question to be answered? How would maintaining a cholesterol of less than 150 with a low-fat, plant-based diet and cholesterol-lowering drugs affect their health? Could the apparent relentless progression of cardiovascular disease be arrested or even reversed? Dr. Esselstyn is right here on today's show to give you the answer. Stay tuned. Go Healthy for Good starts right now. I'm Dr. Nerida. Welcome to Go Healthy for Good. Coronary heart disease is the biggest killer in Western society, and Dr. Esselstyn set out to find the cure. His goal was to prevent and reverse heart disease, and that's the title of his book. It's a fascinating read in which he shares the details of his 24 initial patients and the evidence behind the bold claim that heart disease can be eradicated. Following on from the book, Dr. Esselstyn and Dr. T. Colin Campbell of the famous China study have made a movie called Forks Over Knives. In it, they share how their personal and professional lives have led them to where they are today, calling the world back to a plant-based diet. Here's a trailer of the movie.
This could be the first generation of children in the United States that lives less than its parents.
I got two pills I take for my diabetes, then I got one for cholesterol, high blood pressure, and then I take Byetta, which is an injectable.
I'm getting really shaky, and I'm sick, and I'm fatigued, and that's when they diagnosed me with hypertension and diabetes.
Obesity, diabetes, heart disease, high blood pressure cost this country more than $120 billion each year.
People are saying, you're crazy, you're a cancer patient, you should be resting. Doctors told me this.
When I had the second heart attack, the doctor said, I should prepare for death.
Heart disease is an absolutely toothless paper tiger that need never, ever exist.
People who were raised in Japan, the Philippines, Korea, China, never had heart disease, prostate cancer, colon cancer, breast cancer, rheumatoid arthritis, multiple sclerosis.
This is the atlas of cancer mortality in China.
Virtually, the Western diet was non-existent. They had no animal products. They had no dairy, no meat.
We learned that we could turn on and turn off cancer growth just by adjusting the level of intake of that protein.
I knew at that point what caused most diseases.
Our national authorities are simply excluding this concept in order to protect the status quo.
With the Western diet, there are going to be 500,000 people in this country this year who will have to have the front half of their body divided, their heart exposed. Some people would call that extreme.
I know of nothing else in medicine that can come close to what a plant-based diet could do.
If you go through life thinking that what happens to you from a health perspective is based on your genes, you're a helpless victim.
I've reversed the diabetes. The diabetes is not coming back.
I just can't understand what it's done to change my life.
Diet is so much more important than anybody ever thought.
To me, the answer is so simple, it's criminal. And it's just people starting to take responsibility for their health and starting to eat more plant-based foods. It's that simple.
Today's hot topic for discussion is how to prevent and reverse heart disease. And it really is that simple. But first, the news. In the headlines today, what's so bad about omega-6 fats? Normal weight obesity and the blood of animals. Having high levels of omega-6 polyunsaturated fats in the bloodstream is good for the heart. This is the recently published finding of the cardiovascular risk in young Finn's study. Contrary to popular belief, researchers in Finland have found lower levels of oxidized cholesterol and inflammatory markers in those with high omega-6 levels, and in those with polyunsaturated to saturated fat ratios that are high, and in those with a high omega-6 to omega-3 ratio. Low saturated fat levels were also advantageous. And remember, animal fats are highly saturated, whereas vegetable fats tend to be polyunsaturated. People with a normal body weight for their height, yet a high percentage of body fat, have a higher risk of metabolic syndrome, cardiometabolic dysfunction, and higher mortality. This phenomenon is now being called normal weight obesity. Heart disease patients who carry that extra fat around their middle have a higher risk of death than if their fat is deposited elsewhere. So don't just look at your weight, check your percentage body fat as well. Iron ingested in meat, if not blocked by other minerals in the diet, is associated with sudden cardiac death. A European study investigated the impact of heme iron ingested from animals versus non-heme iron, which is ingested from vegetables, and looked at its impact on the risk of sudden cardiac death. They also assessed the intake of minerals that can decrease iron absorption, like calcium, magnesium, and zinc, in case they made a difference. For men with low intakes of these minerals and high intakes of heme iron from meat, the hazard ratio of sudden cardiac death was almost three times that of a low heme iron intake. It's not worth dying for. Reduce meat and increase green leafy veggies. I'm Dr. Nerida, and that's today's health news. I caught up with Dr. Caldwell Esselstyn at the American College of Lifestyle Medicine meeting, where he was a keynote speaker. He was a surgeon, clinician, and researcher at the Cleveland Clinic for more than 35 years. He and his wife Anne have followed a plant-based diet for more than 25 years and have travelled extensively, sharing their knowledge and their expertise. I asked him why he believes that our number one killer, coronary heart disease, can be eradicated.
I think that our research and that of others clearly would indicate, especially if you assess this in the backdrop of those cultures throughout the planet where cardiovascular disease is virtually non-existent, where they are plant-based, such as rural China, the Papua Highlands, Central Africa, or the Tarahumara Indians in northern Mexico. Cardiovascular disease there is virtually non-existent. And if we sort of borrow from that experience and look at the diets of Americans who have heart disease, it's pretty well almost imperative that they are consuming animal products to make this disease develop. And it's been shown that when you show people that have heart disease, that if they will eliminate the oils, the dairy, the meat, fish, and chicken, and at least for my patients, also caffeine and sugar. Not only can you halt heart disease, but you can frequently get dramatic reversal. And that's so empowering to people.
Now, people would say, when you've listed all those things, they would say, well, what is there left to eat?
But well, what there's left to eat is probably one of the most well-rounded and nutritious dietary plans available. When you have all these marvelous whole grains for your cereal, bread, and pasta, you have all these 101 different types of legumes and beans, you have all the red, yellow, and green leafy vegetables and some fruit. And now, increasingly, over the last two or three decades, the capacity of people who have a knowledge of cooking to blend these into all these marvelous different varieties of recipes that are absolutely delightful. So what you're doing is you're actually exchanging one pile of delicious food that is destroying your health for another pile of delicious food that is enhancing your health. And the exciting thing is you don't have to do it with an operation or a procedure or a drug or a pill with horrible side effects.
After the break, we want to add another recipe to that pile of delicious food that improves your life. But first, think about this. You've got high blood pressure, quite a bit of stress. I think there's a stroke just around the corner for you.
Not to worry, doctor. I'm sure you have a drug medication you can give me.
Yes, I've got medications, but they don't treat the cause. They simply control the blood pressure temporarily.
Ah, come on, doctor. This is the 21st century. I'm sure you've got a pill for every ill, don't you?
Well, we probably do, but do you really want to take pills for the rest of your life?
The rest of my life? Taking drug medications?
That's right. And your disease will probably progress in time, then I'll need to add more medications, and all drugs have side effects.
Side effects? What can you do for those?
Well, sometimes we can give another pill that will help the side effects. But what if it has side effects? Then we're in trouble.
So I could be taking handfuls of drug medications in 10 or 20 years' time? Is that what you're telling me?
That's right.
Wow, that's legalized drug dealing. Doctor, what can I do for my disease to treat it?
Well, for you, there's three big factors. A diet that's too rich, an exercise program that's too poor, and unmanaged stress.
But doctor, why can't I just take a pill for my blood pressure? Wouldn't that be a lot easier on me?
Well, sure, but your blood pressure isn't caused by a deficiency in a medication. It's your lifestyle.
So you're saying if I change my diet and exercise program, I might be able to lower my blood pressure naturally?
That's right. Always treat the cause of a disease. Simplify your diet, take some exercise, and learn to relax. Doctor's orders.
There is a garden in every childhood, an enchanted place where colors are brighter, the air softer, and the morning more fragrant than ever.
Of all life seasons, childhood is the most beautiful.
Children are the living messages we send to a time we will not see.
Blessed indeed is the man who hears many gentle voices call him Father.
A child can ask 1,000 questions that the wisest man cannot answer.
When I approach a child, I have two thoughts: affection for what he is today and respect for what he can become.
There are no 7 wonders of the world in the eyes of a child. There are 7 million.
Children are 1/3 of our population and all of our future.
He called a little child to him and placed the child among them. And he said, "Truly, I tell you, unless you change and become like little children, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. Therefore, whoever takes the lowly position of this child is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. And whoever welcomes one such child in my name welcomes me."
I love learning about my ancestors. It makes me feel like I have a place in history. And I always tell my family, the more you learn about your past, the more you understand the present. But the past doesn't have all the answers, especially about the future. There's so much uncertainty and so much fear in the world today, which is why I'm so happy that I found something that brings together my past, my present, and my future. I know that no matter what happens, there is a plan. And this gives me hope.
often I talk about the importance of omega-3 fats. They're good for the heart, they're good for the brain. And today we're going to have a dessert with omega-3 fats in. And you might be thinking, why on earth would you put fish in a dessert? Well, we're not going to use fish. We are going to use chia seeds. And this dessert is called vanilla chia seed pudding. And joining me in the studio is Lyshall. Lyshall, welcome to Go Healthy's Kitchen.
Thank you.
How old are you?
I am 15 years old.
And you like to cook?
Yes.
What's your favorite thing to make?
Well, I actually haven't made it yet, but I would like to make this dish that we have. It's called bunset.
Okay.
Yeah. Great. From our country.
Excellent. Well, today for the chia seed pudding, you'll need 1 1/4 cups of unsweetened coconut milk or another kind of milk. And I've used soy milk because I like to stay away from the saturated fats that coconut milk might have. 2 tablespoons of agave nectar, 1/2 teaspoon of vanilla extract, and 1/4 cup of chia seeds. Lyshall, why don't you go ahead and mix the milk, the honey, and the agave and the essence together. And once you've mixed those liquids together, you can then add the chia seeds straight away. Throw them in. And the thing about chia seeds, they're really neat. When they go in liquids, they love water. They're very hydrophilic. And so they begin to swell. And they just stick to the sides of the dish. They stick to each other. But you mix it up well. So that when that's well mixed, you want to pour it into your glasses. So you're going to pour it straight into your serving dishes straight away. And then that will go into the refrigerator either for 3 hours or overnight. It doesn't matter how long. But once you've got your chia seeds in the fluid, they'll already be starting to swell. And what you might do is to scoop them in so you get about equal amounts of seeds and milk into each of your serving dishes. That can be a bit tricky. And then we've got one that we prepared earlier, and it's been in the fridge for about 4 or 5 hours, and you can see it's a quite a sticky pudding. So no cooking, full of omega-3s, protein and fiber. You can't go wrong with a dessert like this. There you go.
Thank you.
Tell me what you think. Isn't it yummy?
Yes, very yummy.
Well, that's your reward for coming on the show. Thank you so much. It's been great having you.
It's been great being here.
Here's President Bill Clinton looking great, and here's his secret. Watch.
But you and I have a similar health history. We both had some fairly invasive surgery, and I've been struggling with my weight. You have conquered your weight. What are you doing? How do you do it? Why can't I do it?
Well, I haven't really. I mean, I'm about 5 pounds overweight now because I've been working so hard and I haven't been out doing as much exercise as I need. But I gave up meat and dairy and virtually completely gave up fish. I just went on as close to a vegan diet as I could get and still traipse around the world.
Wow. Well, see, I don't want to do that.
But I'm waiting. But look, here's the problem that sort of 2 minutes. Everybody produces an enzyme that destroys all the bad cholesterol we produce. Almost everybody produces some extra. Problem is, you can't get a test that'll give you how much extra you have. Mm-hmm. So when you and I had to have our heart operations because of blockage, we know we didn't have enough to consume whatever it was we were consuming and live however we were living before then. And then when I dropped that vein and had to have the stents put in, I just decided I'd like to hang around, see if I become a grandfather, or do a few other things. And so I changed my diet to try to drastically cut down on my cholesterol intake so this would never happen again.
Well, congratulations. It's certainly working. See, My problem, things have gone so well for me health-wise that I think I can fudge. You know what I mean? I feel like I've got an advantage, so how about a pound of fudge? You know, literally. But that's not why you're here. Anyway.
You can fudge, just not too much.
Yeah.
But even, you know, Dr. Esselstyn, who has the most poorly militant position, I mean, he doesn't even eat things made with olive oil. Mm. And he looks great. He's about 10 years older than we are. But he has a piece of chocolate every New Year's Eve. So he fudges.
Every New Year's Eve.
Well, okay, apart from New Year's Eve, here are the rules for Dr. Esselstyn's program. Ready? You may not eat anything with a mother or a face. In other words, no meat, poultry or fish. You cannot eat dairy products. You must not consume oils of any kind, not even a drop. And generally, you cannot eat nuts or avocados. Sounds tough, right? But it's not so tough when you think that he was a surgeon dealing with cancers on a daily basis. Now that's tough. Let's find out how he went from treating cancer to fighting cardiovascular disease.
Well, by the late 1970s, early 80s, one of my duties was chairman of the Breast Cancer Task Force. And I became increasingly disillusioned with the fact that for no matter how many women I was doing breast surgery, I was doing absolutely nothing for the next unsuspecting victim. And this led me to do sort of a bit of global research, and it was rather striking to see that breast cancer rates in Kenya were something like 30 to 40 times less frequent than they were in the United States.
So you felt a responsibility that you were on the preventive task force, but you were doing nothing to prevent.
Well, I was really on the therapeutic task force, okay. But I was just disillusioned with the fact that I was really doing nothing to prevent women from having breast cancer. In rural Japan in the 1950s, breast cancer was very infrequently identified. And yet as soon as the Japanese women would migrate to the United States by the second and third generation, they now had the same rate of breast cancer as their Caucasian counterpart. But perhaps even more compelling was cancer of the prostate. For instance, in the entire nation in Japan in 1958, how many autopsy-proven deaths were there from cancer of the prostate? 18. The entire nation.
Wow.
By 1978, they were up to 137. And yet that really pales in comparison to the 28,000 who will die this year in this country of prostate cancer. So somewhere along the line in this self-evaluation, I became aware that I thought my bones would long be dust before I'd ever get the answers from cancer and nutrition. So, although in hindsight, I'm not sure that's true, but
no, I don't think it is.
Nevertheless, it was really quite interesting to say, why don't I choose the leading killer of women and men in Western civilization, which is coronary artery heart disease? Because if we could show these people how to eat to save their heart, then they would, it seemed, also save themselves from these common cancers. So that's pretty much how this evolved.
So how did you come up with the rules of engagement, so to speak, to battle this disease?
Well, I was just simply borrowing from what we had seen in those nations that were plant-based. In other words, how to get our patients to become plant-based. And I was concerned that I had no training in psychology. I was concerned that the rock upon which this study was most likely to flounder would be lack of patient compliance. Mm-hmm. And so I chose as my mantra the same mantra that I learned for my cancer patients from a West Coast surgeon, Bert Dunphy, for whom I had great respect. And Bert used to say that patients with cancer are not afraid to suffer. Patients with cancer are not afraid to die. But patients with cancer are afraid of being abandoned by their family or by their physician. So the first 5 years, I saw every one of these patients myself every 2 weeks in the office, went over every morsel they had, checked their cholesterol, their weight, their blood pressure, Then I got very courageous after 5 years, and I stretched it out to every 4 weeks. And after a decade, they were now on autopilot. So we made it on a quarterly basis.
Tell us about those patients. What situations were they in before they began the program? What was their health? What did their health look like when you took
this original group, I had gone to cardiology to the department at a departmental meeting. They were kind enough to let me make this request to see if I couldn't have about 24 patients, which was, I felt would be the absolute limit. This is why it was a small study, because I was still actively involved with my surgical responsibilities, and I only was given half a day off for research. And the patients they sent me were, as my late brother-in-law used to say, these were Essie's walking dead. They had failed their first or second bypass. They'd failed their first or second angioplasty. They had refused, or they were too sick. And there were five who were told they wouldn't live out the year. All five of those made it actually beyond 20 years.
Wow.
And it was very exciting to really see how rapidly these things began to change. Their angina would begin to disappear. They would lose weight. Their biomarkers, their cholesterol numbers were improving. And it became rather self-fulfilling for them to do this.
So you took people that were really end-stage cardiac patients, and you've seen them continue for at least 5 years then.
Oh, yeah. No, this is a group we followed up to 20 years, actually,
20
originally.
20 years. That's and a very long follow-up study.
Yeah. And so now it was quite exciting to see that patients would, A, adhere to this, and B, do the job, get it done.
So adherence was your issue, and they've adhered. That's fantastic. Truly remarkable. In the next segment, I'll ask him why no oils, nuts, or avocados. But meantime, think about this. Atherosclerosis is often referred to as hardening of the arteries. As the inflammatory process occurs within the blood vessels, calcium gets laid down. Vessels that were once elastic and pliable have now turned to stone. When wood is immersed in water that contains a lot of minerals, those minerals slowly replace the wood and it turns to stone. We then call it petrified wood. There are whole forests that have been petrified. They look like fallen trees, but when you get up close, you find the wood has been replaced by stone. Life's experiences can do the same to us. We're human and we hurt one another, not always intentionally. Then we can harbor anger, bitterness, or hatred in our hearts. We close our hearts to others, become cynical and distrustful. There are many times that we hear the voice of our conscience, yet we choose to go against it because we don't feel like doing what we know we should, and we close our hearts to God. But God offers us a heart transplant. In Ezekiel 36, he says, "I will give you a new heart and put a new spirit within you. I will take the heart of stone out of your flesh and give you a heart of flesh. I will put my spirit within you. You shall be my people, and I will be your God."
When I lived in Japan, I had a friend who was an artist. She painted beautiful, intricate designs on silk fabric that were used to make kimonos. She invited me to her studio, and when I walked in, I saw this long table in the middle of this room. And on this table was about 10 to 12 yards of silk fabric. The work that she would do was so detailed, so intricate, but yet so amazingly beautiful. She would take her time. And sometimes it would take her 6 months to finish a 10-yard panel. I visited her one day, but she was doing something very interesting. With a magnifying glass in hand, she was going over every single inch of that fabric, checking her work to make sure that everything was good. It took her a long time because she did it slowly and carefully. And then she put down the magnifying glass, and with a smile of satisfaction on her face, she said, "It is good." The Bible tells us that God created this world and all living things in 6 days. And he rested after he was finished, because all was good.
All day long, I solve problems. It's nuts and bolts and grease. And I love it. But at the end of the day, I think about the world's problems. I wonder why we're all here and how it will end. And I found something that makes sense of it all. Takes the nuts and bolts of history and paints a bigger picture. Now, I have hope.
You may be listening to this discussion and wondering how anyone gets enough iron and calcium on a plant-based diet. Well, here's the vegetarian's best-kept secret. Well-cooked, dark green leafy veggies have non-heme iron that can be easily absorbed and plenty of calcium. In fact, if you look at this cooked kale, it contains 100 milligrams of calcium. You can see how much kale there is when it's raw compared to what happens when it's cooked. And so this is a great advantage to also to cooking it, because you're going to be able to eat more. Now, the other thing about green leafy vegetables like this is it contains omega-3 fats, folate, and vitamin K. Now, just an aside for those of you that might be taking Coumadin or warfarin, it's the antidote, or its antidote is vitamin K, so you shouldn't be taking them together, is what everyone tells you. In fact, if you have a regular amount of vitamin K every day, then you can adjust your dose of Coumadin. You just have to make sure you have the same amount each day. So look at ways that you can work that out with your doctor. You're obviously going to need to step it up and have regular blood tests while you sort that out. So here we have kale. You know, everyone's calling that the superfood at the moment because it's got protein and all these other goodies in it. And really, I think all greens are superfoods. I think they're wonderful. So there's some kale. This is the same amount, a pound of kale cooked down. And you can see how much kale you can get in when you eat it cooked. Now, if we look at what our other options are, we've got here some, you know, when you think of green vegetables, you probably don't think of this lot necessarily, but here we have some beet greens, some celery, asparagus, cabbage, in this case red cabbage, dandelion greens, and some curly leaf lettuce. Now, when we look at lettuce, what you want to avoid is the iceberg lettuce. It does not have very much nutrition. Now, of course, it's not bad for you, but you might as well have lettuce that's full of goodies. How are you going to eat all these things? Well, you could cook it. You could also juice greens. Now, you're not going to have only greens in a juice. It's going to be a mixture of things, but a juice is a great way to get your greens in, because it comes without the fiber, and therefore you can have a lot more. And because it's raw, it comes with vitamin C and some of those vitamins that might be heat sensitive. You can also, of course, have them as a salad. Everyone knows about salads, and you can put a whole variety of greens into a salad. And then the other thing that's become very popular is to have a green smoothie. So we're going to make a green smoothie right now. We can put in some tomato and perhaps some carrot. And here's some kale. Just, this is finely chopped kale, but we'll put some kale in there. We can throw in some cucumber, perhaps a little broccoli. And of course, we're going to want to put some water in there to make that mix together. And we could put some red bell peppers in there too. So we'll put that water in and make ourselves a green smoothie. And whichever way you have your greens, I think it's great. Have variety. And you know, there are so many other options for greens. Now I'm just going to buzz this. Hang on. Now there's a tasty way to get all the fiber plus your greens, and you can get it down quickly and easily and run out the door. Yeah, how's that? That's real quick, real easy, and really good for you. Now if we think about what other greens that we could have, there's spinach and or Swiss chard or silver beet, bok choy, mustard greens, collard greens, turnip greens, beet greens, cabbage, Brussels sprouts, cauliflower, arugula, lamb's quarters, which is the highest one in calcium, and even, like we've got here, dandelion greens. Now it's sounding more like the front lawn than food, right? Well, never mind. Just be sure to have at least half a cup of green leafy vegetables every day.
Are we ever too old to begin a physically active lifestyle? A 2009 study of 1,900 seniors would argue no. At age 70, the survival rate of those who were physically active was 2 times that of those who did not exercise. At age 85, the rate was 3 times higher. The study found that even starting physical activity very late in life was beneficial. No matter your age, a physically active life is another ageless advantage.
Now for the questions I've received from you via Facebook, text and phone. One texter asked, what are the dangers of consuming dairy? Well, the studies on dairy have given mixed results, but we do know it's associated with acne, some cancers, elevated cholesterol, and considering that dairy cows are fed hormones and antibiotics, there are also some risks there too. Many people also have a dairy intolerance, whether they realise it or not. Sarah Facebooked that she and hubby Wayne have been debating the pros and cons of a vegetarian diet. So to prove her point, Sarah just spent a month being meat-free and then had a blood test, which showed normal iron levels. Wayne's now telling her that creatine is an important muscle nutrient obtained only from meat and that vegetarians run the risk of muscle wastage or bone issues. Well, Wayne and Sarah, I got an expert answer from the Department of Nutrition at Andrews University on your question. Creatine is made by our bodies. That's how it gets into the meat, actually, of the cows who eat only grass. And, by the way, cows don't have muscle wasting or bone loss. Creatine is only used for an initial burst of energy, not for the endurance exercise that many runners or swimmers do. And of course, endurance exercise builds muscle. Now, taking creatine supplements increases muscle levels of creatine, more in vegetarians than non-vegetarians, but it actually has no impact on their aerobic performance. It gives a marginal improvement in weightlifters during anaerobic activity, but not in swimmers or runners. So, Sarah, unless you plan to become a bodybuilder, you don't need creatine supplements, and as a doctor, I think you should stick with the vegetarian diet. Thanks for those questions. You can call me anytime to leave your health question. The number's 855-400-HEALTHY. That's 855-400-4325. And to text or call from overseas, it's 301-960-5144. And remember, you can tweet me or Facebook me. Now it's time to go shopping. Eggplant is known as aubergine, brinjal, and even guinea squash. It belongs to the nightshade family, and so it's related to the tomato, the potato, peppers, and capsicum. It was domesticated in India, where it's made into the most delicious curries. In Italy, there's the famous eggplant parmesan. In France, there's ratatouille. In Turkey and Greece, there's moussaka. And in the Middle East, it's roasted and made into baba ganoush. It's got to be one of my favorite vegetables. I even put it on my homemade pizza. However, it's high in histamines, so some people have an allergy to eggplant and actually to all the nightshade vegetables. I've seen arthritis improve by eliminating all the nightshade foods from the diet. But if you don't have an allergy, then bon appetit. Ah, something else for that pile of delicious food that improves your life. The Mediterranean diet is promoted as being good for the heart, fish and fish oils are prescribed by many doctors to reduce the risk of a heart attack. Yet Dr. Esselstyn's program does not embrace oil of any kind, and even the plant foods that are high in oil, such as nuts and avocados, are discouraged. I asked him why. Your book, Prevent and Reverse Heart Disease, actually chronicles your group of 24, doesn't it? It tells how they started on this program and what you've done for them. And as I've read this book, which I love, and it's a great book, I recommend it to our viewers, but you have a diet, you say no dairy. Why do you exclude dairy?
Well, this gets immediately into sort of the physiology of heart disease and how plaques form. And dairy is so prominent in immediately sort of seeming to injure the lining of the artery, which is the endothelial cell. And it creates intravascular stickiness. In other words, it sets the groundwork for creating vascular disease. And I think the reason that we had success is that we've tried to remove everything from the diet that was causing injury to the artery. That's why we removed the dairy. That's why we removed animal protein, the meat. That's why we removed oils. Oils was injuring the endothelial lining. So I guess I can be accused of being a bit of a taskmaster, but I'm not quite as mean as I look. But we found that when you remove those substances that were creating this problem, that were injuring the artery, that the artery begins to heal. And the more profound the changes, the more rapid the healing. And I think others who have been involved with this feel the same way, that the more profound the changes, the more profound the results.
So you mentioned no oil, but we are told fish oil is good or olive oil is good with the Mediterranean diet. So how do you balance
that? Well, first of all, as far as the Mediterranean diet and the study that was done in February that was reported in the New England Journal, and there was a great deal of rejoicing, I would agree that the Mediterranean diet is perhaps the second best. But let's really look carefully at that study. Remember now that in the two Mediterranean diet arms, there was also a so-called low-fat diet, which was actually 39% fat, which is not low. Matter of fact, what we consider to be a low-fat diet is somewhere around 11%, 10%. So it was really a high-fat diet. But the thing that I was impressed with was the title of the article. The title of the article was The Prevention of Cardiovascular Disease with the Mediterranean Diet. When I was asked to comment on this, I said, I really think the title is wrong, because when they started, the entire group really had no cardiovascular disease. They had risk factors, yes, but they did not have cardiovascular disease. And as the study went on, there were hundreds of patients in all arms who developed death, heart attack, and stroke. These are major cardiovascular events from a baseline where there was no disease. So I think the title of the article should be The Creation of Cardiovascular Disease with the Mediterranean Diet. And I stand by that. Now, as far as the fish oil, I don't want to really get necessarily into a wrestling match with some of my colleagues who may prevent or prefer fish oil. But that's really for omega-3, and we really feel that our patients can get all the omega-3 they need either through the green leafy vegetables and chia seeds and flaxseed meal. And I think our results will stand by those.
How much flaxseed meal or chia seeds do you recommend?
Maybe a couple of teaspoons in your cereal.
Each, yeah. So that would be sufficient each day?
Oh, yeah. Either one or the other. I don't think you need both.
I'm curious, did any of your original 24 patients, were they still smoking when they came to you?
No, we did not have any. I think that would have, I will be perfectly straightforward and say that I really don't think that I can, it's fair of me to take somebody into our program who is smoking, because it's no matter how carefully you eat, if you're smoking, I'm afraid it's doomed to failure. And those patients or those persons who would like to have our program, if they are smoking, I would prefer that they went first through a smoking cessation program, and we're successful in that, then I think we can help them.
So if you're still smoking, save your coronary arteries and quit now. After the break, we'll tackle the cholesterol question with Dr. Esselstyn.
The idea of the Trinity is one that most Christians believe in. In fact, it came about the 3rd or 4th century. In fact, the word Trinity comes from the Latin word Trinitas. And the idea is that you have God, but then God has three other attributes. You have God the Father, God the Son, and God the Holy Spirit. One of the best ways that I like to explain what the Trinity is through the example of an egg. I don't know about you, but I love eating eggs, and I want to assure you that none of these eggs were ever harmed during this production, okay? I have this egg in my hand, and when you take a look at the egg, it's an egg. But if you were to crack open an egg, there's a couple elements that you're going to find. One is that there is an egg yolk. There's what you call the egg white. And then there's a shell. There's three different parts to an egg, but yet it's still an egg. And that's kind of the same idea with the idea of who God is. Even though there is just one God, there are three attributes of God. God the Father, the guy who lives up in heaven. God the Son, Jesus Christ, who came here on this earth to help people understand who God really is. And then you have God the Holy Spirit. In fact, Jesus talks about the Holy Spirit right before he leaves from the earth and goes to heaven. And he says, don't worry, don't be worried, I'm going to send you the Comforter, also called the Holy Spirit. There's three parts to God, but there's still just one God.
Dr. Esselstyn is passing his legacy on to his son, Rip, and together they are making an impact on how people perceive the preventability of heart disease.
Dr. Esselstyn has been eating the same foods that he has recommended to his patients for over 25 years. One of his sons, Rip Esselstyn, used a plant-based diet to fuel a successful 10-year career as a professional triathlete. When Rip turned 34, he was ready for a career change and trained to become a firefighter. Rip was assigned to engine company number 2, in Austin, Texas.
We're incredibly competitive here at the fire station, and we love making bets. So we were out on the porch one night, and we kind of made this little bar bet to see who had the lowest cholesterol level. So the next morning, we drove to a lab, got tested, and the results came back, and it led to a discovery that J.R. James Ray, our resident redneck, had a cholesterol of 344. Pretty much means you're knocking at death's door. And so what we did in an act of solidarity is the next day we went about eating a plant-strong diet to basically save his life and save his arteries.
The men agreed to change their firehouse diet. But in Texas, old eating habits die hard.
Meat's almost a sport in Texas. I have several good friends that they're barbecue teams. That's what they do. That's their sport on the weekends.
Texans are serious about
Texas,
barbecue.
Kansas.
Well, guys associate being manly with eating meat. And if you're a firefighter, it's exponentially so. Last year, for example, there were 133 firefighter fatalities in the United States. 52% were from heart disease. The number one killer of in the line of duty deaths for firefighters is heart disease.
After just 3 weeks on his new diet, JR tested his blood cholesterol and it dropped 148 points, a decrease of 43%. His results inspired the others who also saw their cholesterol drop and their energy levels rise. As firemen, they were not only helping themselves, they were in better shape to assist others.
One of the things about being a firefighter is you don't have any idea what your next call could be. We may have a high-rise alarm where we have to go up 20 flights of stairs with air packs on, with all of our bunker gear on, with a high-rise pack on our backs.
Anybody can go down the pole, but not everybody can go up, especially without their legs.
And right there, you're talking about an additional 75 to 100 pounds that you have to carry up 20 flights of stairs. You have to have an amazing aerobic capacity and strength in order to do that.
Real men eat plants. Real men eat plants.
You know, as firefighters, everybody thinks that we fight fire, and we do. But over 70% of our calls are medical emergencies where we are responding to heart disease, hypertension, type 2 diabetes, rampant obesity. And so we see up close and personal basically the destruction that's being caused by the standard American diet. To me, the answer is just absolutely so simple it's criminal. And it's just people starting to take responsibility for their health and starting to eat more plant-based foods. It's that simple.
Forks Over Knives has a website with up-to-date resources and information. About 30 years ago, cholesterol was implicated as a trigger for heart disease. That's when Dr. Esselstyn began his 20-year clinical research project. Even today, he recommends that we should be keeping our total cholesterol below 150 milligrams or 4 millimoles, and the LDL cholesterol below 80 milligrams or 2 millimoles. Now that's lower than what's typically recommended, even by the American Heart Association. So I asked him why.
Yeah, the American Heart Association might say recommending a level, they'd like to keep you under 200. I think the world-famous Framingham study clearly showed that something like 35% of heart attacks occurred in those who were carrying cholesterols between 150 and 200. So it's not really safe at that level. On the other hand, this was just to sound like really give people sort of a goal, an idea. But I think realistically, even people who are completely following exactly our program as we would, and let's say they're not on any statin drug, there's going to be a small percent who perhaps are not going to be able to achieve 150. Now, does that mean that they should go off in frustration and be worried about themselves? As long as they're not eating a food or something that is in any way injuring their endothelial cells, that the fact that they're carrying a few extra molecules of cholesterol, let's say it's 160 or 170, and they're not eating anything that's injuring their endothelial cells, the likelihood of their being fine is really quite excellent. Because if you look at the Tarahumara Indians who never seem to have heart disease, most of them really have a cholesterol that's quite low. Maybe it's 135, 137. But there are going to be some where actually it's higher, and not a problem. Because all they're really eating is the three sisters of beans, corn, and squash. I'm not asking anybody to go to that extent. But if they are being faithful to the program, but their body seems to need a few extra molecules of cholesterol over 150, and they're not ingesting any food that is injuring the lining of their artery, I think they're going to be fine. Because what really determines heart disease is not a number. What determines heart disease is what goes through your lips every day.
Why do professional bodies like the WHO, the CDC, American Heart Association not recommend the 150 when the scientific evidence is there to suggest that this will make the big difference?
Well, I think if we wait always for officialdom to make pronouncements, it's going to be hard to have progress. Thomas Edison said that dissent is essential for progress. Now, I'm not saying that the American Heart Association should say that 150 is the goal, But I think that it would be helpful if the American Heart Association would begin to recognize the foods that are going to injure the artery every time they're eaten, that it could recommend much more of a plant-based approach. And I think the data now are firm enough, both from wartime experience with wartime deprivation. We know it from epidemiological studies of those nations where cardiovascular disease is non-existent. And we know it from both prospective randomized studies and non-randomized studies that this is a disease which not only can you halt, but you can now reverse. And that is so incredibly powerful.
That's true. I remember sitting in medical school being taught that cardiovascular disease is irreversible. So I can still remember that day. And I don't know, is it still being taught the same way?
I haven't been in medical school for a few years.
But I suspect it is.
I hope not. No, yeah. I think it's now recognized that there are some other options.
Now, your program doesn't just improve cardiovascular disease, does it? What other diseases are impacted?
Well,
the
things that happen that you see immediately are vascular disease is improved all over the body, not just the heart. It's obviously going to improve to the kidneys, to the extremities, to the legs, to the brain, the neck, and so forth. You can see how powerful it can be for high blood pressure or hypertension. These patients have to be watched to be able to rapidly have these medications reduced as their blood pressure begins to come down. Diabetics are a very adventuresome group because they will have to watch their morning blood sugar, because once they start this program, it rapidly begins to drop, and they're going to have to reduce their diabetic medications. And as their cholesterol comes down, they can reduce their cholesterol medication. And I think there's increasing data that it is a benefit not only to prevent heart disease, but strokes. And it looks increasingly like things like some of the more common cancers will be favorably influenced. I mean, Dean Ornish has done some spectacular work with the prostate cancer and how you can alter genetic expression.
So these are the big killers. And thank you so much for all the work you've done through the years to really pioneer this. And I know the world is a better place because of what you've done. Thank you.
Thank you for your kindness.
In order to prevent and reverse heart disease, remember the rules. Don't eat anything with a face or a mother, and no dairy. Know what your cholesterol is and keep it down. Meanwhile, enjoy a wonderful variety of fruits, whole grains, seeds, veggies, and legumes. Make food your medicine 3 times a day, every day. Thanks for joining me on Go Healthy for Good. I'll see you next time.